Hello and welcome to this new episode of Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers podcast. Today we're talking about covert narcissism. And before we go fully into the topic, I have created this episode after I received an email a couple of weeks ago with request to specifically talk about this from one of the listeners, and she also was okay with me sharing the email, so I'm gonna read that out to you and then we'll just dive in to the topic. Thank you so much for your podcast. It really helps me a lot. The boundary setting episode was especially helpful. Thank you again. I just listened to the holiday episode on surviving this season. I am married, have kids, and have a lot of family members, friends to spend the holidays with, but still feel very lonely during this time. I think a big reason for that is the covert nature of my mom's narcissistic behavior. Everything she does is plausibly deniable, which makes it really hard to talk to others outside of my therapist and one friend about my experience. I have been doing a lot of work with boundary setting, which feels fantastic, but the grief is so fierce right now. I'm crying as I write this. Something that I really struggle with is the jealousy and competitive nature of my mother. She is so jealous of the time I spend with my in-laws, who I like spending time with, which makes me feel guilty. This is really strong during the holidays. Anyways, I'm wondering if you could do an episode on the specific challenges in dealing with a covert narcissistic mother. Another thing I wanted to share about my experience that I think can help others is the insidiousness of my mother's manipulation and control. She's very needy for my time and attention, and she finds very sneaky ways to get it. For example, she really likes being in my home with me, especially when I'm alone, so she creates excuses to come over, like dropping something off, picking something up, or bringing over food. Often, it's under the guise of helping, but once she's in the door, she lingers for hours and gets her needs of emotional support, reassurance, and validation met. It took me a long time to realize how controlling and manipulative this pattern is. All I knew was that what she was doing didn't feel loving or helpful, and I felt miserable, exhausted and drained for days after nearly every encounter, and I blamed myself for a long time. I'm doing a lot better in recognizing these patterns and setting boundaries, which has been so huge for me and my well-being. Maybe my story can help others realize the toxicity of these subtle patterns in their own relationship. And thank you for that. Yes, your story does help others for sure, because especially when it comes to this particular type of narcissism, it's really, 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 really intense and difficult to spot. So again, thank you for sharing. Thank you for requesting the topic. And thank you also for being willing for me to share the email, because that does help others relate. So thank you. So subtle is the key word when we're talking about what is commonly described as covert maternal narcissism. They're subtle in their behavior and it's hard to know what they're doing. Yet they can leave you feeling, as the email said, miserable, exhausted, drained, crushed with guilt, and most of all, lonely, because even when you start realizing what is really going on, no one other than you seem to get it. And that's a really, really, really key thing. This can leave you feeling isolated from other family members, friends of years even, from your partner. And your mother will make sure that no one but you see her true face anyways. Behaving perfectly when in company and going as far as making you feel like the crazy one. Since I started this work, I've had multiple conversations describing what I do with different women I know, and I mostly get two types of answers. When I'm talking about, oh yeah, I work with, you know, women with narcissistic mothers because my mother was narcissistic, and the answers I get are this. Number one, oh yes, my mother is definitely a narcissist. She's so obviously abusive. And that's clear. It's like totally obvious. And number two is, no, my mother is not a narcissist. She's more the victim type, Well, she was never there for us. Well, maybe she was a bit emotionally unavailable, but you know, she's the quiet type and she just stays in the background kind of thing. And there you go. That is your second type of narcissist. And usually, if these women actually start listening to the podcast, after a while, they come back to me going, I didn't realize that she was a narcissist because all the ways she's made me feel are the same as the more obvious narcissist, but I couldn't identify that. So this type of narcissistic behavior is harder to spot because it's also less described, and up until not so long ago was not even considered a narcissistic trait by the experts in the field. So it's only recently that it has been recognized within high-end experts to be actually a form of narcissism. It is now recognized as what we call vulnerable narcissism, as opposed to the grandiose behavior of the more obvious ones. Although it is not the proper term to use, this type of narcissism is often referred to as covert narcissism. That's why I have that in the title. It is not actually the proper term to use, but commonly that's used. So just for people to relate and recognize it, I put that in. But vulnerable narcissism would be the more appropriate one. So let's go through quickly. What are the main traits of a vulnerable narcissistic mother? I have about 14 points that kind of give you an idea and describe the more vulnerable type. So, number one, they're very emotionally needy, like the email describes. You know, the woman needs to go and see her daughter. And finds any excuse to go in and get the validation that she needs, fill up her emotional tank. And that's confusing because, I mean, my mother never comes to visit me. So if I'm talking to another woman that goes, oh, my mom finds any excuse to come visit me, the part of me can go, oh, isn't that lovely? And that is lovely until that interaction is actually leaving you feeling miserable and drained and exhausted. It's like they push through boundaries and they still go. It's like even if you don't want her to come, she's still coming. Is not clear in her intentions. If she came to you and said to you, well, you know what, I need to own my need. I am feeling a little bit low and I just would like some company. But look, if that doesn't suit you, that's totally fine. I'm gonna go ring a friend instead. You'd be like, yeah, sure, that's totally fine. Or no, you know what, I can't right now and everything's gonna be okay. That's a normal, not normal. Normal is not the right word. A healthy sort of interaction about wanting to come for a visit. But they're emotionally needy, so they're going to find sneaky ways to come in, like the excuse of bring you something or the excuse of helping you in something, even though you haven't asked for help at all. And they will use ways such as guilt tripping to fulfill their emotional need. She's jealous of the daughter going visit the in-laws, and so she will use the guilt card. Number two, their ways are more often than not passive aggressive, like the use of veiled remarks that do not seem like true insults, but they still reach you. Again, it's an insult only to you. The people around you can just go, oh, well, that was nice. That was nothing major that she just said. But for you, that's a punch in the stomach. Like, give you a very simple example. Oh, if you brought your mother flowers, maybe for Mother's Day or something like that, she could go, oh, thank you for your flowers. Did you know our neighbors got me that bigger bunch over there? Aren't they nice to get such a big one? Implying yours is not good enough. But leaving you in a position where if you say something, everyone listening can think you're seeing too much into it. I mean, the bunch of the neighbors is indeed bigger, isn't it? So she just stated something obvious, but that is it's a very veiled dig at the fact that you didn't do well enough. Number three, she won't express her needs in a clear way, leaving you guessing all the time, and yet letting you know when you do not get it right, which is more often than not to her eyes. So again, it's like she wants you to do certain things, but she won't tell you. She never wants to take the responsibility for her decisions. So she will be quiet. I remember this used to happen, oh my God, with in my home all the time, like the need for someone to be picked up, even when I was older, the need for something to be done, and then it's like no one is asking anything, and then all of a sudden you haven't done it, and and they're giving out to you like, but she didn't ask me. That's not the point. You should have guessed. Number four, she takes the role of the victim. The whole world is against her. This could leave you as the only person she has. She might tell you that often as part of the guilt tripping strategy. So you mightn't be the only person she has at all. She has an army of people. Don't worry about that. Like, I mean, they don't remain alone unless it's part of a strategy, a very well calculated strategy. They want to be alone because that's the only way that can draw you in. I often ring home, not my mother because I'm no contact, but I have other narcissistic members in my family. I was raised by my grandmother and she fits the box just as well. And she will tell me how alone she is every single time that I ring, and then like I'm ringing someone else and they're like, well, I was at the house just 5 minutes previous your phone call. She wasn't alone at all. People were there, but it's just a way to stir that guilt. Self-pity is also often the way they go about that, you know, just they're the victim of the whole world. Number five, her public behavior is very different from how she is in private. She appears like a truly lovely person in public, self-sacrificing even, while in private she puts you down and can go all the way to yell at, be abusive. So it's they're quieter types. And the abuse can seem more veiled most of the time, but they can go all the way to be extremely abusive when in private, when no one sees them but you. Number six, she doesn't want responsibility and she avoids accountability. So she will leave you to make decisions to only blame you later for taking the wrong one. So she could tell you there's such and such thing to sort, because I, poor me, I can't do it by myself. And then you sort it. And then it's the wrong thing. You've done it wrong. You could have done it so much better. Or if she did it, she would have done it so much better. Seven, she will disregard and invalidate your feelings because she's the only victim here, going all the way to gaslighting, leaving you feel like you're the crazy one, constantly questioning your own feelings and intuition. So you could say that you're feeling very sad, or that you're feeling something happened to you at work that left you feeling ungrounded or sad or angry or whatever. And she will go, oh, you know, whatever about that. That's nothing compared to, and then she goes on talking about herself. And going all the way to gaslighting. Gaslighting is when she will make you literally feel like what you are feeling, it's completely invalid and you are faulty or wrong, or you're just seeing fairies for feeling the way you're feeling. The reality is completely different. So it's going to make you question how you see reality, make you question your intuition to the point that you don't follow that anymore, because she holds the truth. And she manipulates you that way. She will often, number eight, she often uses comparison between siblings. So if you are not an only child and you have siblings, there'll be comparisons there constantly. Or with other people outside the family to point out what you're not doing so good, or the clear lacks she can see in you and your behavior. And this can go all the way to the opposite side. She could also use comparison to make you come out on top, as in to say how brilliant you are. But again, that's used as manipulation. So she'll tell you you're brilliant only to tell you that you're bad a minute after. Or she'll tell you that you're brilliant. That's something that she wants you to do, but that you don't want to do. So it's manipulating your choices and your decisions that way. Number 9, she can stage crises to get attention or amplify things to make them seem a lot worse than they are. And that can happen, for example, right before an event. So if you've organized an event now coming up to the holidays, you have like your family meetings for the holidays. If you're celebrating Christmas, your Christmas dinner or whatever. And just before that, the whole thing of going, oh, you know, I don't know, can I make it? I remember my grandmother used to always like, an hour before the dinner, oh no, we're not going to be ready. Oh no, I can't do this time. That's it. The house is a mess. I'm a mess. I can't do it. And I had to run and sort everything for her, though I was a kid. So making this crisis just to get attention and also amplifying things, like, so you could get a message, for example, that's like one of the favorite. They send you a message sort of like this. Something happened. I need you to call me. What does that do to you? Like, you think, I have boundaries. You know what? I'm not going to call her. But then the guilt and the doubt. Because what if something truly happened? And that's such a cryptic message. I mean, and when it's so quickly sent and with so few words, it must really be an emergency. And then you call and she just wanted to give you some gossip on the neighbor. So nothing actually happened. There was no emergency, but she amplifies it and she makes you guessing. She leaves you guessing on what she means. Number 10, she can give you the silent treatment and stonewalling without being clear about what you did to get that reaction. So you'll never know. She'll just go quiet all of a sudden. And again, it's going to leave you feeling guilty. Thinking, what have you done this time? And in the position of having to ask her a lot of questions, which again gets attention on her, and eventually she'll let you know, maybe not. Number 11, the conversation has to revolve around her, although she will talk about others if it is to gossip about their tragedies. She might really like to do that. Or if that leads back to talking about her, like if she did something good for others, or if she can blame others for something they did to her. So ultimately, the conversation revolves always about her. There could be like an entire family gathering, for example, now during the holidays, and she's sitting there and she's talking about herself all the time. And if the conversation stirs off in another direction, she will bring it back to her, or she will do something that will bring it back to her, like, you know, looking sad in a corner, leaving the room. That was a classic in my family, leaving the room. I remember someone sometimes even left the room bringing her own plate away, you know, like, I'm not gonna sit with you anymore because you're such nasty people, I'm gonna bring it in a different room, you know, everything to just try and get attention back on her. Number 12, she will devalue herself in front of others in order to get compliments and approval. She will go as far as self-sabotaging herself to get to you, even staying, for example, in destructive relationships, or if she's still working in jobs that are really, really bad for her, just in order to get attention, to keep that victim story going. And like the whole devaluing herself in front of others is, it's a classic. Like, you know, if she has organized the family meeting or dinner or whatever, then, you know, oh, this is just, it's, I just put this thing together, you know, real quick. Oh, I didn't even get any help. So here's a dig at you that you didn't help. And then, so because I didn't get any help, I couldn't do it right. And the house is looking like a mess. And obviously the other people are going to go, ah, no, come on, you did so great. And she gets her fix. Number 13, she is ultimately resentful towards her children, because she has to give to them, because that is what she needs to do in order to appear good in public. So she will make her children feel like a burden. Because I'm such a good mother. They're such faulty children, but look at me, how much I still do for them. And I'm exhausted. I'm totally exhausted all the time, just minding these children and just doing what I need to do. Oh, and I had to go here, and I had to bring them there, and I had to do this, and like this constant. And for the child listening to that, that's really difficult because you really feel like you're a burden. Because when you're a child, you don't want your mommy to suffer, and you don't want her to be tired all the time. And especially if it's your fault that she's that tired all the time and that she's feeling so sad. I've heard that, like in someone telling me, oh, you know, yeah, my mother was this and that, but you know, she had a lot on her plate. And that is true. I get it. But like still, you need to, yeah, as a mother, there's other ways to go about that. I have a lot on my plate too. But I try my best not to dump it all on my daughters. So when you become a mother and you start, I still remember that famous sentence my mom has given me so many times. When you become a mother, you'll understand my behavior. And I'm like, well, it's true in a way, because becoming a mother, I understood that her behavior was really off and that I'm really not ever going to do the same. At least I'm trying every time to behave from a different place, to come from a space of love and completely different space. But yeah, definitely not understanding how she did it so that I can do the same. That's for sure. And lastly, number 14. So most of all, that's like important. And I know it kind of, I mentioned in one of the points above, but it's just to again reiterate this one. Most of all, there's always going to be a gap between what you see yourself and what she's showing when she's in public. There's always going to be that gap. And that is what really causes confusion and can leave you really, really, really feeling lonely, because no one else sees the face that you see. No one else. I remember bringing family, well, what at the time I thought would have become my in-laws, at the house once to visit and to meet with my grandmother, and but she wasn't available to be in her public show face. And our house at the time was very, very big, so she just went hiding in one of the farthest rooms possible that I couldn't go and bring people, because it was one of the bedrooms. Like, you don't bring guests to visit someone into a bedroom unless they're sick, but they weren't, she wasn't. So she just went hiding, and these people had come to meet her and didn't get to meet her because she couldn't show her face. And then afterwards, you know, she made up by, you know, sending them lovely notes and gifts and things, just sort of going, oh, you had to excuse me, I just was feeling unwell, you know, all the pressure I'm under, and I was tired because I'm working so hard, blah blah blah. So like she covered it up masterfully, but that the extent that they'll go to hide their true face, really. And you are the only one that is beginning to see it. For a long time, you probably haven't noticed. Like the examples of the people I was talking about at the beginning, you know, they go, oh, no, my mom is not this way, is not that way. She's just more the victim type. And which I get it. I get it. It's really hard to see. We've had that in the family. Like in my family, there's some members that are obviously, like my mom is grandiose. It's very obvious most of the time. But other members are a little bit more subtle, and you have to really start understanding all these different nuances and you know, how the subtlety of some of the patterns to actually really see, wow, that's intense. And oh, actually, one point I didn't mention, so a little bit of an extra one that is coming out now, is of course, she will use triangulation. So she will, one thing that I have heard several times from people talking to me, not just clients, but even people talking outside of that, is, oh, and all the siblings were against each other all the time. I mean, we're not close together. We're all close to mommy, but none of us is close with each other because she does that. She triangulates, she gossips behind the back, she speaks to others behind their backs, and she purposely puts one against the other because that's her strength. Her strength is going to be in keeping you separate. Or it mightn't be siblings if you're an only child. It might be between yourself and your dad, for example. She could just do it in a way that she becomes the focal point of your relationship with her and your father relationship with her, but there's no relationship between you and your father. You know, things like that. Because the more she can keep you isolated, the more she can control. So that's one other very important point. And this can be really subtle. So subtle, you mightn't actually, like, you'll only notice when you stop and reflect and go, whoa, how is it that everyone is relating to her, but we're not relating with one another ever? You know, question that. So these are the main patterns that can be recognized when observing the vulnerable narcissistic behavior. It is important to also understand that often a narcissist will have both themes, so the grandiose and the vulnerable, and she will be able to switch as needed. So this was particularly helpful for me to understand, as my mother could be both depending on the situation. And that was quite confusing at first. So when I started coming into the whole understanding maternal narcissist, I couldn't really place her because when she had the upper hand, meaning life was going like she wanted, maybe she had a new partner and she felt stronger because she had someone beside her, and such and such, the grandiose behavior came out and she became obviously abusive. On the other hand, when life hit her hard, like said partner left, for example, the more vulnerable aspects came out. So she retreats in those situations and goes into the victim one. The more withdrawn, quiet, stays in the corner, staring at empty space, wanting people to go ask her how she is, and she's in so much pain, no one can understand her, and she saw this and saw that. So they can have both. Actually, very often they do. It's just depending on the situation they will use, and it can all be it can all, it can even come out just in one statement, like literally, like that victim energy and then the dig. Like, so if you have observed this with your mother, you know by now how toxic that is. When the behavior is grandiose, you might get to the point of even setting strong boundaries. You know, you feel justified in doing so because you can see it is obviously abusive. Maybe you can even go as far as to be no contact. But then she switches and she becomes vulnerable. And the guilt goes up and up, leading you to break maybe and fall back into the cycle. So she can use that even, you know, like to manipulate you. So she gets really, really abusive and you're like, no, enough of this. I can see you for who you are, but then she switches to the more vulnerable one, and that can soften you to the point that you fall back into the cycle because the guilt is there. She has trained you to feel guilty since a very young age, so that will trigger. So understanding that this can be a case is very important. The two themes and how they can be within the same individual. It definitely, as I said, it was very important for me to understand that. So, with all that said, and I'm sure if I probably missed some of the traits. It's, you know, like there's so many different variables to this. And again, some mothers are obviously fitting in the description, and some others are a little bit more subtle. So again, it's always going back to you. And how you're feeling. You know, if after an interaction with your mother, you're feeling anyway like the woman in the email described, miserable, drained, exhausted, sad, extremely frustrated, like all the way to feeling really, 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 really low. then there's questions to be asked. Something is not on in that interaction, and needs to be addressed. It's for you, for you, not for her, but for you. So how do we go about dealing with such delightful mothers? And I'm joking, but it is intense, and I really get it how intense it is. As I mentioned, I've had my mother's mostly grandiose narcissist, my grandmother who raised me for the most part, so she's like a second mother, really. She's a vulnerable narcissist. So it's like, and then other members of my family are different levels of it. My dad is a vulnerable narcissist. So again, like, it can be, I get it how intense it is. So there's different things though that can be done. And that's important, because otherwise we feel like, oh my, there's no way out of this. There's always ways to deal with this and to feel better than you're feeling right now. So first of all, the first thing is to get informed, which is, it is what you're doing right now. I mean, you're listening to this podcast, and I'm sure this is not the only source of information you're getting. So understanding the patterns and mechanisms is very important for you, most of all. It might not be enough to explain it to others, but at least it helps you realizing that you're not seeing things, that you're not actually the one that is too sensitive, maybe because you've probably been told you're too sensitive and you're seeing too much into things. No, what you're seeing is a real thing, and there are some truly toxic patterns going on, whether others can see that or not. So forgetting about others for you is very important to understand all these underlying mechanisms, all these patterns that have been there since you were a child, and they're still affecting your life, and how they affect that. Because when you start understanding these patterns, then you start understanding the patterns within your own system, because ultimately that's the knot of it. You know, your mother is always going to continue behaving that way, and we're going to go into that. But when you start understanding how that triggers you, what it triggers, the trauma that is within your system, then you work, not you work, but you start healing that. And that is what changes everything. It's never going to change her behavior, because it's going to change the way you react to her. It's going to lessen the triggers. It's going to put some space between you and this person and her behavior. And it doesn't mean necessarily that you have to stop being in contact with your mother. In some cases, that's appropriate, but not in every case. So, like, that is going to really support you. It's the one thing I get the most, like, with the women that are doing the 10 weeks program currently, is like that they begin to have space between themselves and the intense emotions. They're beginning to go, oh, I'm feeling extremely anxious, but I actually can just go, well, that comes from this and that past story. I don't really need to feel anxious right now. And that just gently diminishes. It doesn't maybe go away fully, but it's like way less intense. And I'm getting that all the time as a response, and it's one of those, I mean, all of those women, but and it's one of those, it just warms my heart when I start seeing that, because I know I've been through that. I've been through those moments. I, you know, the moments at night where I couldn't sleep, and all the crushing emotions were coming back to me, like anxiety. That was one of the main ones. That constant feeling of someone is going to attack me at any minute. It's unsafe to be in my body. It's unsafe to be me. And then being able to start breathing and just start, because I have gotten myself informed, I know the mechanisms, and then I do all the practices and things that I know support me. But in that, start feeling space, and then being able to just relax and then go asleep. That for me was just like a miracle. A miracle, because for years and years and years I couldn't do that. and I didn't think that was even ever going to be possible for me to do. I thought that's it. So to hear that in the women, that just, yeah, it warms my heart. I wanted to share that with you. So point number two, so as much as possible, start understanding that her behavior has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with you. It's part of her story, and it's a strategy to protect from whatever trauma she has experienced in her own life. So it's not your fault. Vulnerable narcissists, as all narcissists, are deeply traumatized people. Some stuff has gone down when they were kids. Maybe their mothers were also the same, like I see in the lineage of my the female lineage, but also the male, like even, you know, with my dad's. Oh my God, my grandparents, they were a mess, and they've passed on so much. So she had to protect, and she learned strategies like we have. But her strategies are such. So when you understand that, you understand that that has nothing to do with you, and there's nothing that you can do. And that's why I was saying you get informed, not to fix her, not to change her, but you get informed for yourself, because there's nothing that you can do. You are doing nothing wrong at all. It doesn't make any difference what you do or don't do. She will be the same. She will be like that. And I know it's easier said than done, but a lot of healing happens here when you start realizing this is not my fault. This is not my fault. None of this is my fault. And you can say that to yourself as a mantra. It's not my fault. I am not faulty. She has her story. She's entitled to have her story, but it has nothing to do with me. That's her choice. What I choose, it's a different story. Number three, another important part of the journey is accepting that your mother will not change. And I always want to asterisk that, of course, miracles can happen. I leave that door open to possibilities, because why not? But it is not your job to make her change, nor it is your responsibility. A lot of what goes on inside a narcissist, they're not aware of. That's the covert part of it. It's all those thoughts inside of her head, all of that that she's not aware of, that lead to the behavior. So even if you go to her and tell her, oh, this is how you're behaving, you're making everyone feel like crap. You're making me feel like shit. You've just said such and such thing that was very insulting to me. Why do you do that? She'd be looking at you like, what? I don't do that. And a narcissist will never admit to being wrong or responsible for their actions. Sorry is not really a word in their vocabulary. Again, unless it's to, oh, I am sorry, that's me being bad again. Well, then they're just playing the drums of victim story. So they use the sorry word, but it's because it's part of, you know, spinning that story of being the victim, but they don't really mean it. So this healing journey is about you, and you deserve to prioritize yourself in this. It's not about your mother. You're not healing to heal her. You're not learning this to heal her. None of this is for her. All of this is for you. There are actually women that are in the 10 weeks program where we talk very, very little about their mothers. Like, with some, none at all. Because it's not about your mother, it's about you. Not because you're broken or faulty or because you need to be fixed. None of that. But because it's your journey. It's your journey on reclaiming your life, on understanding what's been going on up until now in your life because of your mother. And now you're reclaiming that power. You're reclaiming your identity. You're reclaiming yourself, and you're going, my life from now on is going to be joyous and happy, and it's going to have the full spectrum of emotions, and it's going to have the full spectrum of experiences, because I choose to, and I'm a sovereign being, and I have my own identity. That's your journey. Now, to speak to the loneliness, because again, we said, like in the email, that was very clear. And I know that that is a big, big, big thing, that loneliness and isolation that is there. When you're especially, that happens even when your mother is a grandiose narcissist, but definitely with the vulnerable type, that most more subtle ways that she goes at it can really leave you like the black sheep in the family. feeling like you're the one that's seeing things. No one is talking to you. No one is understanding what you're saying. No one is seeing what you're seeing. That's really, really hard. And especially when it starts happening with your partner, I've seen that in cases. I've had women coming on in very difficult positions with their partners because of that. The partner doesn't see what she sees. So I get that's really, really hard. So the first thing to do about that is find the support you need. First, so forget about everyone else. Again, if it's a therapist, a coach, a mentor, a mix of all of those things, you are not supposed to do this on your own. Even if you feel like it's all in your head and that you're imagining things and you've been convinced that that's what it is, still, if you're feeling miserable, depressed, exhausted, drained after every meeting or interaction with your mother, it's a clear sign that something is going on with her behavior. And you need all the support you can get. You deserve that for yourself. Like, you do deserve that support. Reach out. There's so many. Like, you can reach out to me, of course. The email is always in the description of every episode. But there's so much support out there at this point. When I started understanding all of this, I didn't know where to look. I actually didn't know narcissism was a thing. I didn't know there was support out there, and I did so much of it on my own. So much of it on my own. Now, I was very fortunate that my partner really, really got it. Although, like, not always, but he got the point that my mom was a narcissist, so I didn't have that, having to fight with him about that. But I did feel very isolated from the rest of my family. Friends started looking at me weird because, you know, when you start talking about your mother a certain way, that's a weird, weird thing to do. Not everyone wants to go there. So there was a lot of that. And being on your own is difficult. Very, very difficult. So find the support you need. And on that note, another point to that, to add to that, is find a group where you can feel safe to speak to your experience. And there is a distinct difference between having your therapist, coach, mentor, and a group. Okay? And both are important. So when you're doing the one-on-one work, you're going deep on your own personal stuff, but you're relating only with one person. And that person is usually someone that has been through or that is an expert. Not necessarily your therapist had a narcissistic mother, but they're an expert in their field. So, but when you're speaking in a group, like a women's circle, of women that have been through the same, so not any women's circle, but a women's circle that is specific to this topic, you are going to meet other people and relate and share with other people that have been through very similar experience. So this is not to make comparison. But it is because they will understand. There will be this natural understanding of each other because we've been through the same experiences. Maybe not the same, but the same in terms of trauma and energy to what was happening to our life. So that is really healing. It builds that safety. If you go into non-specific women's circle and women don't relate to that, there can be weird patterns going on and like some passive aggressive stuff going on. That will be very unsafe. It will feel very unsafe. And I say that because I know a lot of women, when I talk about women's circle, go, oh my, that's a scary place to be. And it is. I've been into some scary ones. And I got out very quickly. But I've also been into incredibly amazing ones that have supported me in my journey immensely, that I really, if I didn't have that support, I don't know where I would be. So, and when you have grown up with a narcissistic mother, you have felt unsafe all of your life because you can never feel safe with someone like that. Ultimately, deeply inside, maybe you thought you were, but you weren't. So, a safe container where you can start opening up pathways of safety in your system is very key. And that's why these two components, a support and a one-on-one container, even for a period of time, That's why the 10 weeks program is like 10 weeks, because like you need that for a period of time. You mightn't need that for years. I don't know. I don't believe in that very much. The whole, oh, I've been in therapy for like 20 years. Yes, there is a place for that, but if you're going on a specific thing like this, it can be, you can stir enough in a shorter period of time, and then the group kind of keeps you, it maintains the work, it keeps you going, it keeps you expanding and exploring more. And that. So those two things are very, very important. Now, as you've noticed, I haven't put in anything like, oh, you could do this, or you could do that, or you could do the other. Like, of course, setting boundaries, as the email explains as well, it's really important. You can go back to listen to the boundary setting episode at this point. It's among the first few episodes, I think. The one key to set successful boundaries. That's like, it's a very important episode. It's one of the key ones. So you can go back and listen to that. That gives you a lot of really important stuff about setting successful boundaries with a narcissistic mother, which is different than the setting boundaries in general. So you can go and listen to that for the boundaries, because that's always very important. And then there's something else that I want to speak to, because I found advice in a few resources, something that I just was feeling into that, and I was like, no. So what I found advice in a few resources was to shine the light on their on the behavior of the narcissist, especially when it's a vulnerable one, that is kind of that covert, hidden one, and to sort of expose it with others. That is a tricky one. I'm not saying that that suggestion is inherently wrong, and I don't hold any truth. I just want to share it with in my personal experience that did not work at all. It can be particularly difficult, especially with other family members that are as involved as you are, and they don't see what's going on. The manipulation can run deep, and to try and convince others of what you see might have you feeling even more isolated. So you feel isolated because you're the only one that sees it, and then you try and expose it, and you're actually going to feel even more isolated because no one is coming with you on that train. They have their own points of view. They have their own reasons not to want to see whatever is going on in their lives. And they can turn against you too. So it's just to be aware of that. Also, the narcissistic mother will not take kindly to that. She will react. She will go all in with triangulation. She will go all in with sending you flying monkeys. She will go all on the attack. Her behavior is gonna get worse, because when a narcissist is exposed, they get angry. They don't like that, because the whole public face is what matters the most to them. So it's just a thing to know and to be prepared for. If you like, I totally understand. Of course, exposing it's a good thing. As in, people, if you think that people are going to start seeing what you're seeing, but you need to be very, very careful. You need to have that support group. You need to have the one-on-one work. You need to have a network. You need to feel, you need to be safe. You need to be safe. I have done that, and I have exposed my mother's behavior from a whole different country I'm living in. I'm like really far from all family at the moment, and still there's been some flying monkey and some shit coming at me, but like I wasn't in the middle of them. So it's just to be very careful. So I'm not advising you to keep it all secret, and it is true that speaking about it and uncovering can have its place, but it's a very personal choice and different from case to case. I've seen it in many cases where everyone teamed with the mother against the one black sheep of the family. So that can be the situation, okay? Again, remember that this is your journey, it is your life, that you're reclaiming for yourself. What the others want to do is their choice to make. Of course, there are people we would love to get what we are experiencing. You know, for example, as I said, your partners, or maybe like a sister you're particularly close with, if you've managed to have a relationship with your sister. My mother did her best for myself and my sister not to have a relationship, and she even went as far as separating us when we were kids, sending us to two different houses. But she, like, so I guess that is that you want to have them on board, but you really need to feel into it and do it slowly. Someone asked me once if it was a good idea to pass on the link to this podcast to her sister, for example, in the hope that she would finally understand. So this woman had kind of opened her eyes. She was like, I know that my mother is a narcissist, but my sister is still completely enmeshed. Can I send her the link? Do you think it would be helpful? And my answer was, you can do that. It could be helpful, but it mightn't. And you need to remember that we all make our own choices. So you can pass the information on if you can do that without attachment to the result. So you just pass it on and then let the other person decide what she wants to do with the information. Maybe she wants to listen and maybe that will help her, or maybe she will just look at you like you have three heads and she'll never listen to that. And before you take such an action, you need to be okay with both these possible outcomes. Because otherwise, you're setting yourself up for hurt and disappointment. When communicating with your partners, the best way to do that, if he's not on board with the whole thing, and he's not really understanding the whole narcissistic mother thing, is to start by owning your needs. So whatever about your mother, you don't need to convince your partner that your mother is a narcissist, but you can own the need for different boundaries when it comes to her. You can own the need to see her less. I mean, it's in your right, it's your mother. Or whatever it is you might need on this journey, you can own that need. You can say, I have a need for such and such support. I have a need to see my mother less. I have a need for my mother not to come into the house when she's not invited, so we're gonna make some changes. I have a need for these things, for me to feel better, for me to have a better life. So whatever about your opinions about if my mother is or isn't a narcissist, we don't need to go into that, but these are my needs. Okay. Check out the latest special episode that we published last week with Mark Osher, with my partner, where we speak about the challenges within relationships when it comes to communicating how we feel as women and to be understood within the container of a long-term relationship, because that's yeah, that can be tricky, but there are ways to communicate in a better way that can support each other through that. Support your partner understand where you're coming from, supporting you in being understood and seen, and all of that. So yeah, you can have a check to that episode if you haven't yet. And yeah, that's it. I'm all done here. Please share your experience if you've recognized that your mother fits in this description a little bit and you want to share your experience with me. That's totally welcome. And also, if you have more questions about it, if you want to know more about this, if there's some things that I haven't mentioned that you feel are important, please do reach out. Email me. The email is in the description of the video. Of the episode. And also there's a lot of exciting offerings coming on for January that I am super thrilled to introduce, but not yet, not yet. I'm gonna keep you hanging for a little while longer. But yes, stay tuned for that because it's coming. And there's a special episode coming this week. So on Thursday, yes, I have an amazing woman coming as a guest. That she's come as a guest. We have the recording done, so it's gonna be published on Thursday. And this her name is Megan Mahaluhani, and she is an embodiment mentor and the founder of Amba. She's absolutely amazing. So stay tuned for that, so you can listen to that episode. And yeah, that's all from me for now. I'm sending you Lots of love. Bye for now.